Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Unknown Zone. This is the talk show about the unusual. I'm your host, Dave Turco, with co-host Judy Sellens and our monthly guest, Mr. Gary McKinstry. Gary is the internationally known psychic medium and tarot reader. He joins us every month for free readings right here live on the air. So if you would like to call in, look at this thing is covering up my little cheat sheet on my screen. Now here it is, the guest call-in. Is 347-637-2956. Good news is it's on our show page. So if you're listening to this and you're on a computer, at least you see that. So you can call in anytime over the next hour and have a reading with Gary. Good morning, Gary. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
Hello.
You know, before we were on the air, we were just discussing how to tell if someone is human or non-human.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a really neat subject.
It is.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, look at the kids in, where they have those black eyes.
Yeah. The black-eyed kids, yeah.
Yeah.
The people's things. Carlos Castaneda used to write about that, which, again, kind of spooked me because there they were in, like, nowhere's, not to knock Mexico or anything, it's a beautiful country, but just out in the plaza, and he and, what was his name, Juan, I guess, right? His teacher would just sit and watch, pick out the non-humans.
Yeah.
Well, how many are out there?
I think I've met, for real, a few.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what was your tip-off?
The way one of them was dressed, he had on a bad Beach Boys plaid summer shirt, a pair of khakis, white socks, and sandals. And he had a Hare Krishna haircut before it was in vogue. And I swear he had, like, the pocket protector and the pens with him.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And can I tell you a quick story?
Of course.
Sure.
All right. I was working at a place, this is quite a while ago, in Worcester. It was a bookstore / restaurant, and it was called Dinner and a Reading. So if you bought dinner, they paid me to, I do a quick free reading. So in Worcester in the summertime, when it's like 100 degrees, there is nobody on the streets. So I pulled off the highway, excuse me, and you know how you have the person on the side of the road with the "will work for food" sign?
Yes.
Well, there's a guy there, and he's got the wool hat on, the jacket. It's 100 degrees. He's sweating profusely. I pulled the car over, gave the guy a $5, and told him to get something to drink. And I just drove off. I went all the way to where I was working. And I was there for about maybe 15, 20 minutes. And this guy came in, and very slight build, very short, dressed like I said. And he said to me, "I saw what you did." Now, this is way across the city where the off-ramp is. And there was nobody around. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I saw what you did. You gave the man $5. I said, "Yeah." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because he probably would have died out there because it's 100 degrees. "Well, how do you know he didn't buy alcohol? How do you know he didn't buy tobacco?" I said, "I don't. I just know the man needed to get hydrated." And I said to him, "Can I do anything for you?" And he said, "You've already done it." And he literally spun around, walked out the door, and disappeared.
Wow.
That was first strange encounter.
Mm.
Okay, the first one. Go ahead.
My son and I were up, and my wife were at Lake George. And we were camping up there. And at some point of the week, my wife, I think, got sick of us, which could happen, and sent us to a super Walmart to get tomatoes, which we really didn't need. So we're in the middle of a super Walmart, and a man walks up to me, and I didn't even see him walk up to me, and said to me, "I'm deaf and dumb, and I need help buying something." So I'm thinking, okay, well, what can I do? Can I show you something or whatever? And then he hands me a card that says, "I'm deaf and dumb." I heard him in my head. I didn't hear him speak.
Oh.
mm-hmm. you know, it was like the telepathy deal. So I knew he was deaf and dumb already. Then he handed me the card that says, I'm deaf and dumb, but I need help. So as it turns out, I helped him, and I even paid for what he needed. And then my son looked at me and said, Dad, this is kind of strange. The guy that just walked away just kind of disappeared into the crowd. He didn't just, like, I didn't see him walk out the door. He just walked over and kind of, like, vanished. So, yes, I think I've met a few people that weren't from here.
So do you think that was just a little test or some walk-in, or what was this?
I always took it as, like, this has happened to me, like, 3 times. I've always taken it kind of as a test to see what I'd do.
Yeah.
You know, like, by the way, I don't know if they're angelic. I don't know if they're extraterrestrial. I don't know what the heck these people are, but they're always funky. The guy up at Lake George was dressed sort of right, but not right.
That's about how they usually are, too.
This is the odd thing.
Short, but all rumpled, and it didn't fit the weather.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, again, whether they're inept angels or...
I don't understand this part of it, because you'd think that they would be tuned in enough to get those little details right. I think maybe lots of times they do, maybe lots of times they don't. I can tell you, like, one story that's not firsthand, where you guys know I'm devoted to the Blessed Mother and everything. And so, and I see it all coming true, all these things where there are the prophecies from Garabandal, Spain, from the early 60s, how the world, or Western world anyway, what was not communist at the time, was going to start to turn sort of communist. That was like the big thing, if we don't change. And of course, that's exactly what I see happening. But anyway, at one of the, so there were four girls who were seeing either the Archangel Michael and or the Blessed Mother, basically daily at one point, and then it sort of spread out. And some of the big, if you will, appearances, I hate to use terms like that, but when the Blessed Mother was going to give a message that was going to be not just for the girls, but for the world, a slew of people were going to be there. And one of the girls had said, and this is because people were taking notes madly at the time, because this, you know, because it was a big deal, at least to Catholics in the area. And Ed Helver heard once say that people are going to be so surprised because they're going to be two visitors that they don't know about. And nobody knew exactly what that meant. As it turned out later, there were supposedly two angels. One of the girls was told two angels would be present for that apparition. Okay, what happened was, so there were these two people they thought were from, and again, early 60s, this is Garabandal, Spain, which is in the mountains near the French-Spanish border. Incredibly rural. These people were very isolated. Remember, there was no, not only internet, they barely had, I don't even know if they had phones in that village, actually. It was extremely primitive still, okay? So they didn't have much interaction with the outside world. And there were these two people that they thought were either Scandinavian or, like, from Switzerland, because of the way they were dressed. Two blonde, blue-eyed boys, if you will, like 18-ish, 18 to 20. And they looked more like they were wearing, or we would think either Swiss or German, those funny short outfits that you wear in the mountains, like, hey, who, yeah, whatever, and blowing a horn. Yeah, just completely different. And sort of had these satchels. And they're like, okay, these guys are different. They're clearly, you know, these. And so one thing that happened was that this one person related was the fact that they were talking among themselves in Spanish, assuming that these people were probably, say, Germanic or Scandinavian and didn't speak the language. And they were saying, you know, they're just questioning whether this could be the Blessed Mother or not. And as soon as they had that question of doubt, those two just turned with this, like, a frown of disapproval, if you will. And there were other things that happened, but again, witnessed them at the end of it all, just what I call blanking out or blinking out. They just vanished. And so I'm thinking, now I don't doubt that those were angelic visitors, but how do they get the uniform wrong? That's what I don't get.
Well, I kind of wonder if it's a transmission deal. You're talking about a dimensional hop.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're off just a bit, it's kind of like going on the internet to find out what you should look like. And what if you hit the wrong page?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, the first gentleman that I ran into was dressed really well for the 1960s, but not 2000.
Mm-hmm.
The second one looked kind of like he might have got his outfit at the Salvation Army, but didn't bother to iron it.
But interestingly, this gets into one of my experience firsthand. Now, this was the firsthand experience of I now believe is the Archangel Michael that I encountered when I was around 12 years old in the park in Westerly with a friend of mine that we were playing after school. We went down to the park like a lot of kids did. We happen to have a great park here in Westerly. It was designed by the same guy who did Central Park in New York. So it's kind of a little coup that we have here. And anyhow, out of the blue, this guy comes. And again, it was a warm, sunny day. And he was dressed differently. He looked more like, we're on the East Coast, okay, in New England, looked like a California surfer dude. And he had, what was amazing was he had these crystal blue eyes that I will never forget. That was the tip off. And I knew this guy was different. And the fact that he honed in on me like nobody else existed, that was weird too. And not in a creepy way. You know what I mean? So anyhow, in spite of what, you know, he talked about, which were things about me that he couldn't possibly have known, he had his backpack, he had this long, blonde, curly surfer dude hair. He just was out of place completely for a town that's largely Italian, you know, dark, shorter, whatever. And the park, so that was the entrance to the park where he came in, where there's this beautiful fountain, and then there's actually a large expanse. And then now the trees have grown up over time. They planted a lot of really cool trees. But then, you know, 45-ish years ago, it was just this open field is the middle of the park, basically. And it's still pretty open. We're like, okay, well, who is that? That's weird. We turned and looked, and he was gone. There was nowhere for him to go, even if he was, like I say, Usain Bolt or whatever. He couldn't have gotten out of there without us seeing him. He just vanished. Something else will come to me, because I know there was another case, Judy, that we... Oh, I know. Somebody that I... Because of the stuff I do and have been doing, like the show, every so often I get some unusual calls. And one was a call from a woman from Cape Cod. Brilliant woman. She was, meaning to me, hilarious and entertaining. She was Jewish and proceeded to tell me that as part of the story. She went to the movies with her husband. The hilarious thing is she started to choke to death. I say hilarious, but, you know, the way she was telling it, she survived. So she starts to choke to death. She couldn't tell anybody, because you weren't there to telepathically get it. She's trying to tell her, convey to her husband that she's dying. She can't breathe. And is like, thanks for everything, but I'm going now.
Uh-huh.
So she just decides, okay, they don't get it. I'm out of here. I'm just going to stumble into the lobby. And then she contends the Archangel Michael shows up, and she goes, and the first, what'd she say to me? Let me tell you, that guy knows how to dress.
Uh-huh.
And she said he was, again, out of place. This is not the opera. It was a regular movie theater, and he was just dressed to the nines and just was just, again, just out of place, and just immediately went to her. I don't know if it was a Heimlich. I think he didn't even do the Heimlich maneuver. I think he just put his hand on her, if I'm not mistaken, and everything just went away. And again, there was like this eye contact that they made, and then he just left. Now, he did not say, hey, I'm the Archangel Michael, have a nice day, not your time. But she somehow pieced it all together, and I don't deny it. And then he left, and, you know, again, sort of just gone. But so there was that, again, this commonality of the weird clothing thing. Bizarre.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I happen to agree with you. If they were that in tune, you think they would be like perfectly dressed for the area?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right?
And the other thing saying, like, with the stuff that's happened to me, I don't know why the crazy little tests, you know, like, what are you going to do? It's kind of like that TV show, What Are You Going to Do If?
Right.
Yeah.
Evidently, I've passed the test, which is lovely. you know, I'm glad. You know, it's like they seem to get credence out of it. They smile and everybody's happy. And I love the questions for the first one, because although it was very vivid, I'll never forget this. You know, like, why did you give this man the stuff? And it's like, well, he was going to die probably. It's 100 and some odd degrees.
Right.
You know, I thought it was odd. Like, why would you do that? I'm thinking to myself, why wouldn't you, you know?
Right.
But it's interesting, you know.
It is.
And I look back on it, and I'm thinking, like, is this interdimensional? Is this angelic? Is this alien? And, what, you know, like I said, why the test? Who knows?
I know, because it could be like our friends on Star Trek, right, where there were some of those episodes where they were interdimensionals. And they were just, like, curious, like, trying to basically figure out these life forms because they couldn't quite exist in our dimension.
Right.
And, you know, part of it could even be that. Judy and I have done shows on that. We call it angelic. There are different realms, you know, even in Christianity, esoterically. Right. It's not just heaven, hell, and limbo, if that exists anymore. Now I think they say it doesn't, whatever. You know, seven heavens, right? So we know that there are different dimensions, different levels when you're not in the physical. And the physical is just yet another dimension we happen to be in. And so, yeah, maybe there are beings out there that can take on our form and just, like, are really curious as to trying to figure it out. I remember that one, this is why I always bring up sci-fi, is because they get to explore things that seem a little bit whacked and normally wouldn't be in a normal drama. I think there was some alien race that didn't have our emotions or whatever, so they took three of the people, the crew, and they really put them through all these tests. And I think with Deanna Troi, that she was just eating tons of chocolate because they wanted to – they got to experience her experience of eating the chocolate and that kind of buzz she got. And then Captain Picard was this woman kept trying to – was like endless – it was like the knight in the – and the damsel in distress routine.
Right.
Just to get that, et cetera. It's, you never know. I mean, life is interdimensional and multidimensional, and a lot of times we could be somebody's experiment, which I think I'm part of that. But
I was perfectly happy with the outcome. You know, I mean, it's like I wasn't expecting a prize. You know, it's like I got to help someone, you know, and I felt perfectly at peace with it. But it was just funny because, again, and these were simple tasks. We're not talking about, like, hey, do you have $100? These were simple things that were done.
Yeah.
And when you're done, you just sit there and you scratch your head for a minute and go, like, okay, exactly what – and by the way, the first one I was telling you about probably happened about close to 15 to 20 years ago that I can still remember exactly what it looked like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's vivid in my mind. And
yeah.
It wasn't – by the way, he wasn't extraordinarily handsome. He didn't look like you know, the guy can't believe it's not butter guy or anything. You
right.
know, it's like, he just, this little guy, you know. And the other one happened to look probably more, it was funny when you mentioned Italian, whatever. He had kind of dark, curly hair, a lot of heavy side. And, you know, just the way it works.
Yeah, real weird.
Kind of like, what would
you know, Dave and I have talked, and it wasn't last year, I guess it was. I got a phone call from a guy that I used to know, and we talked for like 45 minutes, and I knew he'd been sick, and I was really surprised that he called me because I actually thought he had died. And so, anyway, the thing that I get about this phone call is how clear it was.
Yeah.
And so I get this phone call, and he's talking about old times and all the things we did. And, you know, I would love to stop by and see you the next time I'm in Westerly. And he was telling me about how he went down to Musquamaket. He hadn't been down there in so long, he got lost. And he's telling me all this stuff. And then I get a phone call from a friend of mine. She said, did you see where Fred died? And I said, no, I didn't see that. I said, I just talked to him. And so even my daughter had said, my, you couldn't have talked to him because he wasn't conscious. He wasn't responding to anybody. And he didn't have a phone. And so she said, there was no way he could have called you. And I said, I'm telling you, I talked to him for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was totally clear. I mean, this guy had an accent. It was his voice. I would have known it anywhere. And I told her, I said, no, I talked to him. And she said, that's impossible. It's impossible. He died. And I says, well, if he's dead, you know, then how come I can, he called me up, the phone rang, I picked it up. She said, you must have been dreaming. I said, no, I wouldn't have been dreaming about him if I was dreaming. But no, works. I wasn't dreaming.
It all works on the theory of vibrational harmonics. On a cellular level, what happens is, as an animate object, we vibrate at a certain rate which corresponds to the universe. When you talk about plane systems out there, the multi-dimension, what happens is everything has its own vibrational point. And one of the easier things to do, I shouldn't say easy, but when it comes down to electronic equipment or whatever, that also vibrates at a certain rate. And it seems that quite often people on that other dimensional plane, I'll use the term, can manipulate the vibrational rate to come through. Even when I do like the medium stuff, what I'm doing is changing my vibrational pattern to a degree. What I'm doing is actually slowing my system down to match the vibrational rate of the next level or plane. If you want to call it a trick, that's the trick to when people do medium work, even if they don't understand what they're doing. What they're doing is when you create a trance-like state or a comfortable state, what you're doing is slowing your function down. You're slowing your vibrational rate, even though it's minute, to match the vibrational rate of another plane. The plane where, let's say, your friend Fred, whatever it was, is just one, I'll use a step, a nano step ahead of us. So at that moment, he might have been slowing his rate down to talk to you because you were a good memory to him. And this is something he wanted because, A, it's familiar. This was a good time period for him. So he slowed down to match the vibrational rate to hit the phone frequency, if you're following all of this.
I am.
You know, by the way, David, you're absolutely right. In Christianity, they call it seven heavens. If you look, let's say, at the Hindus, they have 22 planes of existence.
Right.
If you look at the Tibetan world, they have an infinite number of planes of existence. You know, these are all interdimensional forms.
Right.
You see the Tibetans, and they're moving the giant prayer wheels, and they're doing the continuous om. What they're doing is mimicking the vibrational pattern of the universe.
Right.
Today you have tons of people that are doing yoga, okay? Hatha yoga, this yoga, that yoga. And one of the first things they teach you in yoga is the continuous om. But they don't tell you what it is.
Exactly.
They don't tell you that you're becoming in tune with the universe around you and that your pattern is now starting to match the pattern of the universe. They kind of leave that part out for some reason. Maybe that, maybe an exercise is better. It's too deep the other way.
Well, I have my own theories on that, but everything gets bastardized, and because there's great power and wisdom in yoga, because I delved into it very deeply, you know, into the Vedas and Vedic astrology and all that other sort of stuff. And what's happened is in yoga, I'll just say this briefly because I was the first yoga instructor in Westerly. Right. And so the thing was, people get into the, I call it the Olympic yoga.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
Men in Black.
Exactly. So anyway, the whole point of the physical postures is to get your body in shape enough so that it doesn't get in the way of your spiritual development.
Correct.
That's it. But nowadays, it's all about the body. So you can always tell the people who are the yoga people by what they look like and what they wear. And it's really something, but they've just eliminated all of the spiritual aspect of it. It's absolutely amazing. And one thing that's interesting, because I did this with my father, I also did play. My father died of cancer years ago, and it was in hospice care. And at the end, and I alternated either playing the continuous OM tape, which, of course, at first the nurses hated. They thought it was this creepy stuff. And then, of course, they got to love it because they said it was so peaceful in his room, because there's obviously usually a lot of agitation with that. And there's also a continuous Alleluia tape that I had. So we would alternate those things just to prepare him, because one of the things I learned at the ashram was how to prepare somebody for crossing over, and so that they try to leave through a higher chakra. Long story, but anyway, I think we did it. Who knows? But you start to get that. That's it in a nutshell. It sounds trite nowadays because of all the things that are out there, but it is. It all has to do with vibration.
It's interesting you mentioned on the hospice part, when my dad, we did hospice here with my father. He had lung cancer.
Yeah.
And before he passed, one of the things we did a lot, a friend of mine is, you know, he's a medicine man, and daily he would do a drum.
Drums,
but a rhythmic chanted drum, which basically would put, you know, it would put dad, if you want to call it, in an altered state to a great degree. And that relieved, I want to say it relieved all the pain, but it changed his state. Whether, by the way, and it's all the same, whether you're using the continuous OM, whether you're using Alleluia, whether you're using a drum chant, again, you're changing that vibrational level, and that's the whole deal. You know,
right.
You're altering the state and without, you know, without using hallucinogenics or anything like that, which I find interesting, because you can get high, you can get higher than a hallucinogenic state by altering that vibrational pattern.
Right.
You can change your consciousness totally. And, you know, you get people, and I think a lot of these people are trying to mimic it by altering their drug state. And if they only knew that basically you could change that state in a positive manner without using anything.
Right. Yeah, and in keeping with that, Gary, in a negative way, this is another thing that we were taught. When you die, if you can, try not to be on any heavy medication, because it can actually sort of, that also changes your vibrational rate and kind of muddies things. And I know people who have not died permanently, but had near-death experiences, and they were, both of them had a similar experience, but they were on heavy-duty medication to sort of put them into a coma at the time. And when they went out there, they just were like, oh, I went to the abyss. I couldn't feel God. And like, I'm going to go to hell. And I'm like, no, it's just the drugs. It's just the drugs.
Yeah,
but they say, yeah, go ahead.
It does, the drug alters the state, but it doesn't do it in a positive way.
Exactly. Right.
What you're doing is, instead of raising your vibrational level, the drug is actually lowering your vibrational level. You know? So you're not going to be, and I'll use the term, attunement that way.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So, that was one of the things they definitely talked about. It's all super interesting stuff with the whole vibration thing and the things that happen to people. But anyway, just tying this thing up, how many non-humans do you think are actually walking around at any given time? Seriously.
I kind of believe it's about 1/3 of the population.
Wow. It could be. But even 1% would equate to millions and millions.
Yeah, but I think it's more than that. I do believe it's across culture.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine who has called in to the show, I think you've given her a couple of readings over the years, Gary Kelly.
Yeah.
She's a great person, and I've gone through a lot with her with the spiritual side of life. And one thing we tried to make a little pact with was, okay, the next time this happens to us, meaning you know you're interacting with, it looks like a human but isn't, is to call them on it. And, you know, just like right there and then, you know, ask them who they are, what's this about, whatever, you know. But we always chicken out, you know, in the fear of making a complete fool of yourself. Kind of like what one of my favorite movies was American Dreamer. I don't know if you ever watched this movie. Jo Beth Williams was in it. I love her. And she went to France, and she was acting out in the movie a detective story, because she got conked on the head and went into this altered state, and, you know, she thought she was the character or whatever. And so she's on this train, and there's this elderly woman who really was an elderly woman, and she thought she was in disguise, so she's trying to yank her wig off. It's you, you know, say John the Ripper. And it's not coming off, so she does it again. It's you. And that's what pulled her back into reality. It's like, I'm actually pulling this elderly woman's hair. It wasn't somebody out in disguise. Oh, crikey.
Let's say you said to one of these people, "I know you're not human. What are you?" What if they told you?
I would concentrate on breathing. And
breathe, damn it, breathe. Yeah, no, I get it.
Don't go anywhere. I've done this sort of thing in my dreams, and this is what happens to me, where I, because I do a lot through my dream life, and I can feel myself. It's all about vibration. I'll call you other up and say, "Oh yeah, I was vibrating like a tuning fork last night," and that's what literally happens. Like in my dream, when I'll do something and say confront a non-human and. I'll start doing that vibration thing because I get a little bit too excited. So I got to calm that down and stay grounded while I talk to Jesus. Because that's the thing. How many people could handle it if Jesus just popped into the room?
I think he'd be pretty chill.
He would be, but would most people is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he's not going to come up and say, "Hey, guess what? I'm the big JC." So, I mean...
But, you know, and speaking of that, too, it just reminded me of my Celtic ancestry of they have a little expression about entertaining angels unaware. And that's why you always welcomed a guest, like a traveler, even if it's in the barn. You had a place in the barn, even in the old days in Ireland or whatever, in rural Scotland and England, because you didn't know if they were an angel testing you. So this theme is old. People knew this was going on a long time ago, you know, forever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's
well,
really...
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting now it's happening in a super Walmart, you know.
Well, right.
Must be the sign of the times. I don't know. get them in the avocado aisle, you know. It's always fascinating when you mention, like you said, I'd like to know how many different species of non-humans would be. That'd be really interesting.
Exactly.
Oh, I think there's a whole lot of different kinds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree totally.
I always look at it this way. Reality, the movies and reality are always close together.
Mm-hmm.
And I always look at like Men in Black, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that, you know, I always think to myself, that's far more real than most things. You know what I mean? It's like, do I believe that we're worried about immigration from other dimensions? No, I don't think we're that advanced as a race. But I'm thinking to myself, man, maybe that's where they should worry about the illegal aliens not coming over the border of Mexico.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's quite the trip. And even in the thought of some of these non-humans actually being in our government. And Yeah. Oh, no, not at all. But also, you know, tying up just to show a precedent for Judith's experience with, I call it dating the dead.
You need to get dinner out of them, Judy.
God, yes, your problem is they don't usually carry money.
Well, we don't know that, you know.
Well, you know.
Pennies from heaven, Judith. Come on, pennies from heaven.
Yeah, that would be, yeah, pennies from heaven. You don't get much to eat.
I've always asked my brother for gold bars, but I only get pennies. Anyway, so Carolyn Mace, remember her?
Yes.
Carolyn Mace. She was in the alternative racket, I'll call it. She wrote a lot of books, Contractor of America, and she did a lot with archetypes, and I really liked her. A little bit whacked, but I loved her personality. And she relayed a story one time. I used to listen to a lot of her podcasts. There was a Native American Indian called the David Chetlahay Paladin. And she had gotten a call from him. She was an editor, by the way, so for books. And he called her up and asked, there are those men in black. sorry about that. Looking out the window, looking at the men in black. He called her up Christmas Eve asking her, could you – I'm writing my whole life story, and will you edit – I'd love to edit your book, blah, 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 blah. Only to find out he had passed, like earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so she's like, you know, swearing up and down, I know the date because it was Christmas Eve. And I'm talking to him for like a good hour. I'm like, okay, well, when are you next in town? I can't wait to see you. And oh, I'd love to edit your book, which she did do, by the way. She did edit his book. He did have it written. And of course, at that point, they didn't know what to do with his unfinished work. Well, it was finished, but not, you know, polished in print form. And so she did do that. And so again, it was that same thing. They do happen, and probably more frequently than we know.
Yeah, you know, everyone takes visitation as, you know, that voice in the middle of nowhere or the shadowy figure, and a lot of times it's far more realistic.
Yeah.
You know? It's not, again, if I'm going to come through, I'm probably not going to come through as a vaporous apparition in the corner somewhere, not if I don't have to.
You know? Mm.
Right.
I always get a kick out of the ghost shows, because in the ghost shows, what they're picking up is a loop track of something that's left an imprint. You know, I mean, very seldom are they picking up intelligent conversation.
Correct.
They're picking up something that's been... And of course, why wouldn't you? Look at the places that these people go to find it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a sanitarium that's been closed for 100 years. Well, no kidding. You got to pick up a voice track of somebody that's basically sad and demented and in a bad state. So they've left an imprint there. You're not going to get like, hey, how you doing? You know, my name is Harold. You know.
Right.
This is how it works. You know. And they're not jumping dimensional state. They're just picking up something that's left over from, you know, long ago.
Yep. No, that's quite all right.
I sometimes see these things and go like, okay, why don't they do some real work? You know, why don't they get somebody in there and jump dimensional states? Why don't they do something to, you know, anyway.
Yeah. In a similar vein, I had a question for you. So I had one of my dreams the other day, and it was really, really interesting because I had the seed thought ahead of time. I noticed I'll have like a seed thought, and that sort of then the dream goes from there, ever creatively. So anyway, it's about, and this gets back into biblical times and historical views of causes of people's odd behavior. So in this dream, so the seed thought was, when people do things that are really irrational and not very nice, is it because they are, one, a bad person, evil, blah, 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 or are they actually being prompted by demons or evil entities? And so in this dream, which was extremely crystal clear, and at the same time, I'm getting like, it's a multidimensional dream. I'm getting like voices sort of narrating the whole thing, and then I see it, that sort of business going on. And what I saw was often, it's not everybody, but that we are constantly at some level or not, and that the people that are really, really, you know, like in a what we used to call lovingly the nut house, actually are possessed. How much do you think of that is actually real, like actual either spirit possession or spirit influence in a negative way?
I pondered that a lot, for real. In my youth, I was, I don't know if you want to call it lucky enough, but I had a friend of mine whose daughter was at an institution, one of the ones that was infamous and now closed. And there were several times when I went to visit this person there. So what, I'm talking, I was probably 12, 13 at the time. And I remember firsthand what the places were like for real when they were running. And yes, I believe a lot of these people were, I'll use the term, in a trans-dimensional state. That doesn't necessarily mean higher state, okay? I believe they were picking up things from another, like a portal, so to speak. But some of these were very low vibrations. I think also possibly some of them were picking up higher vibrational states too, but had so much confusion in them that they couldn't kind of like cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, I'm not blaming everything on it. Some of it may be organic. Some of it may be,
right,
you know, chemical imbalances. But I do believe there's probably about, you know, who knows, maybe a quarter of them that literally were picking up a lower vibrational state and couldn't deal with it. You know, whether you want to call it an entity or a demon or whatever, it has its
right,
own plane to be on. And for whatever reason, the portal was open, and I think this person was on the same sort of wavelength with that. You know, when you get,
I really
like,
think a lot of times when you get these multiple personalities that they're doing that.
Yeah.
That they're picking up all these different personalities, and then they think it's themselves.
Well, take someone like, let's say I'll use the term a serial killer. And yes, I understand the psychological background profile, you know, the whole bit. Usually there's abuse and there's this and there's that. But when you get down to it, some of these people may be basically doing a physical act for a lower vibrational plane. The lower vibrational plane can't come across itself because it doesn't have a physical entity. But, you know, if it could grab hold of a physical being, basically, and use it almost as a tool, so it could receive sort of like the signal, so to speak, that's what I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My own hypothesis, but...
Could be.
You know, I mean, when you look at these things, because a lot of the things that are done, I'll use the term, are inhuman, and it's kind of like, okay, why would a human being do this? Well, gee, maybe it's not a human being doing that. Maybe it's a lower vibrational entity that's come through to someone. And I wouldn't say the person was weak, but maybe at that moment they had an opening or a portal where this came in. And if you want to call it possession, I guess we call it possession. But for that
mm-hmm.
time period, whatever came in held that form. And what would it get out of it? Probably the physical ramifications. Whether it's some kind of perverted positive energy for it, you know, whether it, I'll use the term, enjoyed what it was doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe it needed to feel that physical, whether it's lust, perversion, or whatever.
Right.
So for that time period, it's doing its thing and using the person almost as a puppet.
Yeah.
So it can translate the energy. I mean, why are we here in the physical plane? We're here basically so our senses can pick up things, so eventually when we cross to that next plane of existence, we have a reference point, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever wonder why the physical?
Yes.
The whole idea of the physical, basically, is for when you reach that next level, you have a basis in some form of reality, so you understand pleasure, you understand pain, you understand love, you understand all these things, and you now have a basis to create a new reality for yourself. Because without this, I mean, without a physical dimension, it's pretty hard to have a consciousness that's never felt physical.
Right.
When I pick people up, when I do like the medium part, I'm connecting to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically coming through in their own positive, it's usually a positive dimensional realm. It might be someone coming through in their recliner watching TV in their nice snug little living room.
Right.
It could be someone sitting at the beach enjoying that brisk breeze, you know, that, mm-hmm. and the clouds and the whole bit. But they have that physical dimension from their past that they can relate it to.
Well, yeah. this is what I, if you will, worry about. So is it when we leave, are we creating our own almost false dimension of, like, you know, still sitting at the fishing hole on a sunny day with a sandwich or whatever. And we can somehow hold that for who knows how long because there's no time out there, or it's at
right,
least
you're
different.
You're not going to stay in that form eternally.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, that's like my fear versus if there truly is heaven, this is my goal, which I believe that there is. And that we can reach these other states. Now, again, if you go into traditional, I'll call it yoga for lack of better terms so people can relate to it. But let's say the esoteric, intellectual, spiritual side of yoga, not the physical postures. Their claim is that until you reach that seventh, we'll call it seventh heaven for lack of a better term,
Nirvana,
to
right.
make it Christian. Nirvana, the highest level, you can still fall all the way back down to the very bottom because you're not there yet. So you can still, even highly developed beings still can fall down if you're not like in that permanent heaven, one with God state.
And at some point you go to a collective consciousness.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
Right, that's later on. By the way, I do believe we stay here as long as there's a need for attachment.
Mm-hmm.
What do I mean by that? Probably 5 generations from now, my children's children's children really won't know who I am, nor will they care.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, look, 2 or 3 generations out, somebody may remember you, okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But 100 years, 200 years from now, I'm just going to be a name in a book somewhere. And
right.
there's a good chance, why would my consciousness need to stay?
Yeah.
At that point, I'm going to change levels, planes, or energetic pattern and move forward. Unless I have a reason not to. If
right.
I'm so infamous, if I'm so this or I'm so that I'm always thought of, maybe I'll stick around. By the way, both on positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, we're 70 or 80 years out of World War II, and everybody knows who Hitler is.
Yes, they can't stop. Yeah, that's one of my bugaboos, by the way.
You know,
uh-huh.
Somewhere, I'm sure his dimensional form is probably still attached to something here because people keep using his visage, so to speak.
Right. And this is another thing in certain cultures. I mean, you have these rituals when they leave, but this business of keeping people's photographs and staring at it every day or that sort of thing, in certain cultures, that's a big no-no. You're supposed to let them go because they recognize that creates that attachment and can inhibit their growth.
Right. Well, that's true, but let's put it this way. If we're talking universal time,
mm-hmm.
you're only doing that for, let's say, 20 years, 30 years.
Right.
But let's say you had a beloved parent. The parent dies. You have the photograph. You look at it every day. You mourn over this. You put energy into it. Still, you're only doing that for maybe 20 or 30 years.
Right.
Yeah.
In an infinite universe, that's a not even a drop in the bucket.
Agreed. Yeah, true.
You know, so on that level, that's different. You know, I unless you wanted to hold somebody, there are people that want to hold on to that point where they will not release.
Right.
And I think that does impede things, at least in our lifetime. But beyond that, again, our lifetime is a speck in a universal contingency. So.
Oh, absolute speck. It's getting speckier every day.
I think there's been times in my life where I must have had too much time to think of all this.
Judy and I have been doing this for how many lifetimes, Judith?
Oh, I don't even
trying to
know.
Figure this thing out. Obsessing about why am I here? Back I come. Why am I here?
A lot of times people will ask me that. You know, if I'm doing a reading, people go like, what's my purpose?
Right.
And
yeah.
They always look at me odd when I say it's multifold. You know, they think like
right.
There's one event in their life that they're here for. What if you're here for 100 or 1,000 events?
Right.
You know, you let somebody cross the street, you didn't hit them, but that person turns out to be the person that comes up with an enzyme that can cure cancer. I gave the homeless guy $5, okay? Maybe he goes and says something to somebody and they're the one that didn't cross the street and get hit. There are all of these possibilities that connect to everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when people will ask me, like, what's my purpose? You know, yeah, your purpose is to be the best person you can be for you, okay?
Right.
The purpose is basically if you could possibly spread something positive on the planet, that's it. That's your purpose, you know?
Exactly.
You
end of story. End of story. I know, exactly.
Yeah, if you happen to be one of those rare people like Madame Curie or something, lovely. Good for you.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that the everyday life, because I got people that are like, my everyday life is worthless. No, it's not. You know? No
right.
Life on the planet is worthless.
Right. That's right. And depending on where you are in your evolution and whatever you want to call that, you know, some people only last here for moments. You know, they die
right.
at birth. But there is a purpose to that. And the people.
I had a lady who lost a child, and she wanted to know, why was God so cruel? And I told her in a very nice way, I said, the child needed to know unconditional love. In its lifetime, it needed someone to be born from. It needed someone to remember it. It needed the unconditional love that a mother could give an older mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are tough questions. I don't, you know, and I always get hit with, like, is grandpa happy? Yeah. He's eating sardines in front of the TV watching Hawaii 5-0. This is great, you know? But sometimes people, you know, they want to know, like, or did they do something wrong? Is this like, you know, is God, like, beating them up because they did something wrong? And you have to explain to these people that who and whatever God is not vengeful. And maybe because you were 5 years old and you stole a candy bar, you're not getting, you know, beat up for it. So,
exactly.
Anyway, this is part of my daily life, you know.
Good to hear it. Now we know your purpose.
I've known my purpose for a while, you know. Sometimes
it's too bad everybody doesn't know their purpose, you know.
Sometimes my purpose is to bring peace or the beginning of closure.
Right,
by the
yeah.
way, anybody that's a medium, if they tell you they can help people get closure, they're only the beginning of a process.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You don't know how many people I've told you need to, maybe a grief group would help, a counselor. Maybe you need to get reunited with your faith. Maybe you need to talk to the family member you haven't talked to in a while. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I get the fun stuff, like, yeah, the money's hidden in the wall. That's kind of nice. I just had one of those.
Was
oh,
it?
Yeah.
I had a lady's ex-husband come through to say that before he passed, he didn't take her name off his 401k.
Oh.
He meant to take her name off of his what do you call it, the 401, the money?
Yeah, yeah,
he never
yeah.
got around to it.
Ooh. So she made out.
Yeah, I got an Applebee's gift card for that one.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, yeah. Oh, boy.
You know,
right, yeah.
That's the other thing in my business. You really don't, it's a very serious business, but you can't always be totally serious.
Right.
You know, we do a whole 2-hour deal. We do the group things. And I've actually had people come up to me and say, I didn't realize you'd be funny. And I'm going,
well, life is funny, you know, in many ways. So if you're talking about people who lived, then there's going to be a lot of comedians coming through.
Well, that's true, too, because, again, Judy and I, with all our maladies, but we basically laugh our butts off, unless it's really, really, really a bad day, because it's absurd. I feel it's absurd. What I mean, especially with Judith, some of the things that she has to go through with her body, but me too, which is pretty freakish. I did that thing again, Judith. Might as well share it. When Judith comes out of, it's really scary for her to have an operation, because if she comes out of anesthesia, she goes into this weird tetany thing and does this back bend and whatever. Well, I do that in a milder version every morning. And unfortunately this morning, you know, I'm quite the freak show. I really am. You know, for a nanosecond, I wake up and I feel pretty good. And then my body does that stretch thing. And because of my muscle things, I go into this, I was absolutely arching. I can't stop it. And it takes me, luckily, you know, I set my alarm real early because I know it's going to happen. So I have a couple of hours to work out my muscle spasms before I do the show. It's unbelievable. But, you know, freakish, you know. But I got all my blood work, Gary. I'm perfect, and there's nothing wrong with me.
Isn't that nice?
I don't have any autoimmune diseases. I have no inflammation in my body. And it's like, that's not possible.
Do you have those ridges in your fingernails, David?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
I have those really bad in my fingernails. And my doctor had looked at them, and I said, you know what those are? He says, yeah, I was just looking at that. He says, you got inflammation in your body.
Okay, so in the book, well we're going to close to the end of the show, but I'll end it this way because I used to be, you know, managing a health food store. So there's that great book, Prescription for Nutritional Healing, in its many forms, right? And so they have a whole section on signs in the nails, right?
Yeah.
And the ridging I have, it was, I have gotten it, so it's actually better, but I still have ridging. I never, because I used to look for the sign for a zinc deficiency or calcium deficiency, those little white horizontal things. Okay, don't have any of those. But I noticed in this, when this all started to happen to me 20 years ago, I developed these vicious, I guess they'd be called vertical. They go the length that way, not across, ridges. And that's considered, look it up, arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, blah, 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 blah. It's a sign for that. And, of course, don't I have it? But, yeah, you know that. I do have the tendency for psoriasis, whatever. But, no, as the doctor said, you have no organic reason to be what you are. I'm like, whatever.
Well, hey, I want to thank
help
you guys.
Me.
Yeah, go ahead.
I truly enjoyed this morning. I don't always get a chance to rant and to let it rip. So
we have fun in this wacky life.
Yes, we do.
And Gary, give us your number, contact everything.
It's 508-943-9058. You can check us out on the web, and we are going into event season. I probably have about 20 events around here and there. And again, check me out at GaryMcKenstry.com.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Thank you,
guys.
Oh, it
was great having you on, like usual.
Yeah, lots of fun.
I'm putting a roof on my building, so I have to do that now. So
just hang on tight.
I will. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to
you. All right, you too.
Okay, guys. Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks, Judy.
Okay.
And for Gary McKinstry and Judith Sellens, I'm Dave Turco for The Unknown. Thanks for joining us this week, and see you again next week for another hour of The Unusual.